keep forgetting the name. Good evening. I call order the Monroe Public Schools Board of Education Special Work Session. Today is Monday, May 12th, 2025, and the time is actually 5:30. Jamie, can we have roll call?
Yes, Mr. Huck.
Here.
Mr. Jenkins.
Here.
Mrs. Myers.
Here.
Mrs. Trossi.
Here.
Mrs. Vincent.
Here.
Mrs. Williams.
Here.
Thank you. Can we stand for the pledge, please?
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Next up is our discussion items, and I will turn it over to Superintendent Shaw.
All right. Hey, good evening, everybody. So our first item we have is the Monroe County Intermediate School District budget. And so I believe it was last week, emailed it out to you. They had a video. So if you enjoyed that, roughly a little bit of time with us about the ISD budget. He has come light years since 2015 when he first started doing this. But it's usually a very dry budget. So the Department of Public Schools in the county, in each county, ISD has presented a budget to us on the 1st of May. My local districts either approve or not approve the budget by the end of May. If the local board does not approve it, they have to give a rationale for why they don't approve it. I was telling Tom earlier today that has happened. Back in about 18, 19, 20, right in that range right there, local school districts were voting down the ISD budget. We were frustrated there's only a couple of school districts one time. Only district back in 19 that actually passed the budget that year, during that time frame. We were frustrated because we felt like some of the revenues they had needed to come to the locals, but it's more also the service areas. So the general fund is all about services. Okay, that's how we get what the ISD can do for us there. They're not going to send monies ever to a fund, and so it's more services. On the special education side, it's services and money. So we do, and each year, receive special education monies back. And at that point in time, well, we weren't seeing those monies until December. And we had pushed hard to get it earlier, and so that happened. And then after that point, though, each local really started just addressing the ISD individually about what their needs were. Okay, and I can confidently say to you today that the relationship that Monroe Public Schools has with our ISD, both in the general education side and the special education side, is extremely positive. We have a phenomenal regional director that we work with that is truly meeting our needs in special ed with systems. And so from my seat, there is no reason for us to not support their budget. You can see when they presented the papers that they're going in, fund balance approximately $1 million in their general fund, and in their special education fund, there's predicting that they're going to go into fund balance about $6 million, I think was the number I saw there. I'm catching my numbers really quick.
And the IEP is in budget goals.
Yes. Yep.
And they're anticipating an increase in that?
No, they're going to use fund balance.
Yes.
So, no, typically they try to run out of balance fund balance, balance and or add a couple of dollars. And this next year, they're going to actually use a fund balance to get through services with projecting. Now, at the end of the time, just like you guys know, for our own budget, we went through the audit, and that $1 million general fund, most likely that'll balance out the special ed one. That one, they could end up spending more. In special ed, their hardest part is they budget for so many FTEs of staffing, and because they got the allocation there for it, but when it's all said and done, there's lots of times that they can't fill all those positions too. But that's what they're trying to do. So they start out with they're showing going in almost $6 million next year in this side of the special education fund. Okay. So, they'll end up with a $23 million, almost $24 million fund balance. Expenditures is $58 million. Oh, no. The state really wants you to stay above 5% are on their watch list. Board policies are all over the place. For us, we need to be in the 8 to 12 so we don't have to borrow. You've got some school districts that are sitting 20, 30, 40% fund balance.
Yeah, but typically in Monroe, 8 to 12.
That's for us, yes.
That's yep, where I got that.
Yep, that's where we would like to live. Now, the ISD.
Where are we at? Is that where we're at right now?
Right
predicted to be? For our fund balance?
I am still working on my final budget amendment at the. That I presented in February, we were going down to like a 5% five or 6% fund balance. I don't have it right in front of me. I apologize. But we're hopeful that we won't go that far into it. Just, and like, I don't know how much of what we'd like to get done is going to happen.
Yeah, because we can't keep depleting that. Because if you deplete it too low, we're going to find ourselves in a situation.
Right.
Yeah.
No, theirs is about 40%.
Theirs is 40%.
As I mean, but one of the things that the ISD does have, so they don't have a like per pupil foundation. They have money coming through special education. Cass, if you want to hop on that quickly about how their funding looks in the special ed work.
They are funded by several different special ed pieces of the state school aid act, all under Section 51. And some of those funds are just partially dispersed to the LEAs for the students that we provide services to, but the majority of the money stays with the ISD. And then they also receive funding for their GSRP, Head Start, Early Childhood Special Education programs. But they don't receive the per pupil foundation allowance for public education.
Which is why they can hold a higher fund balance.
No, that has, they just don't have
just the way they go.
It's just how they manage their funding. They receive a lot of different streams and they maintain a certain fund balance of their general fund and their special education fund because they receive more different funds based on what they do. They get money for the court place pupils. There's different things. They just don't get the
currently our number of IEP students in the IEP has been on the decrease. And so each year, so when we look at the special education budget, the money that comes from the ISD, it's always a year back. So it's, this year's data will help fund a year from now.
And the 504s are increasing.
All right, 504s, that one, there's a little less control on whether a 504 numbers will increase or not, because you may come in and have peanut allergy and or a visual impairment that for a moment of time and or something else that create the 504. So 504s can be much more fluid than it's going to say right now, because we actually discussed it last Tuesday morning, was the number of IEPs in our school district. That number. A lot more students have been vaccinated.
But they need it.
Oh, yes.
We're going to continue to have
the money. Yeah. Well, that's the thing is, when you look at special education funding, for the services they need to provide, we're still underfunded. And so that's our big challenge that you have counties in the state of Michigan that have 100% for their special education population. In our county, we're right now at right around, I think it's like about 74-ish% reimbursement rate. So all the other costs that are associated with special ed come out of the general fund for us.
The percentage determined by the...
So it's all about, some different counties have millages, so they'll have like something to offset. That's why they'll always talk about, how do we get closer to meeting the requirements of IDEA, and so we can maximize that or not. And that's where that shortfall
is. The shortfall is that our funds and grants is a
No, the shortfall is just that they don't, we're just not fully funded for special education services. So we just have to use the general fund to offset that cost.
I can, if I may add, so the ISD receives all the special education funding. They fully fund the expenses they have and give themselves a buffer in their special education fund. Then the cost that's left over is they disperse to the LEAs based on the cost we incur. It's never equal. We don't ever receive what it costs us for our special education services we provide. So I just wanted to reiterate that.
Well, since we're talking about general fund money, is there a model to just keep this?
So there's ways that we work to control it. So, like in our school district, for one example, we specialized transportation. So, right now we have 4 specialized transportation buses that transport kids. If we can, through the IEP process, and it works, have less kids that need to have special transportation, that reduces that cost. So that means that's just coming straight off of. The other is in the county, if we would all kind of could control what we pay, so we pay X for a one-on-one aid. Well, Mason's going to pay Y, then he's going to pay this, all over the board. Where we might be one of the lowest ones, and someone else will be paying $5 or more. Well, that whole pot that Cassie was talking about, everybody's pulling from it. And so that's the other factor of it. So it's not fully equitable. Right there. So we school, try to control our costs to protect our general fund, where other districts may not do the same either because some districts don't have the type of population.
Your business, you have to protect
that.
If you don't, you're
going to
be out
of it. Right. I just think how we try to trust ourselves closer to not. That's all. Yeah. So are there any other questions on ISD budgets there? Yes, ma'am.
So a long time ago, we used to have a countywide in-service. And, during the countywide in-service, we all used to be able to go around to, different locations around the county and attend different topics and different discussions based on lots of different things.
Right.
Was that an ISD expense originally paid for by the ISD?
I highly doubt. I don't know.
There was a portion.
Because I was taught these that wrong.
Well, they cover unique things.
Partially, the ISD did provide some things to the local districts. Also, paid a different session.
So, I don't think we ever billed, if other people attended ours, we didn't bill that district for the attending. And I think likewise, the sessions done by the ISD are for free. They wouldn't fill them. So it's kind of like
they're back.
But they also did it for other community resources.
So for the, we still have the opportunity to, there are still professional development offerings at the ISD that students can, teachers, sorry, I'm shifting from work mode to board mode still, that teachers can still attend and things.
Yes, there's lots between ISD for teachers, support staff. Mm-hmm. They might still be offering even every summer the bus driver one. So there's things that they'll offer throughout the whole year.
So is that still something that districts have to essentially pay for their employees to attend at the ISD?
The answer is it depends.
Yes.
So some sessions, some things they'll offer to us for free to have our students, staff attend. There's others where there is some sort of nominal cost. It just depends. We have some folks that attend the CPI refreshers, mm-hmm. and the ISD does let them attend for free, but we do have to reimburse them the cost of the workbook things that they order, which is nominal. But and it's no different than what we have to pay for them to take the class.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Anything else there? So tomorrow night, that'll be on the agenda for approval. Our next item is the METS contract. Remember, METS is our company we use for our bus drivers. Actually, when I say bus drivers, it's bus driver management and everything bus goes except for the fixing of those buses. So they've been with us now, I think this is heading into our fourth year or so. And so in front of you, you have last year's extension and then the extension for this next year. It was kind of exciting because we're finally at a spot where they asked this year for a tier five, which means a tier five means you've been with us now for four school years as a bus driver, which is kind of a big deal to have some people with longevity in the job there. So they'd asked to provide those people a 50-cent an hour increase. Their overall service fee went from 27% up to 27.75%. Their service fee is on hourly wages. So they do not apply the service fee to any kind of trainings that people have to go do. So it's only applied to when they send the bill for hours of service. That's when they're 27.75% put on there.
But the first 4 years, they kept it at 25%.
I remember this jump. Yeah. I'm recalling this conversation because that was a big jump, and I think that was an issue, wasn't it?
Them letting the 25% ride for 3 years was a good faith on their effort. Mm-hmm. But then they brought it to 27. They hadn't had a pay increase, and we felt that that was fair for the wage, and it's all based on the wages.
And that,
well, that was separate from the service fee increase. Service fee increase was separate from the wage increase. There was an agreement on the wage increase, but the service fee was
right.
It's all together.
It's all together.
I was thinking they were separate.
No, they're together.
My brain miswired sometimes, so I can't always recall everything.
And so remember that their service fee is anything, all taxes required on the salaries of the individuals, hourly wages. It's also going to have insurances that they have to provide. And so their company, and so that's part of the percentage that they make as a company. How much of it, I don't know, but if you're a business owner, all those expenses you have inside, you have the administration of running payroll. Well, that 27.75% is part of their business to run payroll. So that was that one. We do have van drivers. And so, again, that one moved one tier. So I've been driving for actually 4 years. Substitute driver hourly wage. Like move that to $20 an hour. It's and here's something that's really, really cool for our school district. This year, as you guys have seen, we've been able to do all but two runs, I was told, of extracurricular activities when it came to for busing, okay? There's only two guys you got to bring in a charter. The other amazing thing has been this spring, which is usually the most painful time of year, we've actually been able to provide services to Ida and Dundee for their after-school activities because we had the drivers free to do that. And so it's nice because we just bill them $30 an hour from the time the driver person leaves our facility to wherever they go when they get back, okay? And then that way the driver, they're working, they're making money. If they use one of our buses, which Dundee has had to do, we just charge them the fee that we do on field trips. So it's kind of a cool setting to where we're actually at the beginning of the first level of conversations around putting a program together where we create a substitute pool, much like when you see with a substitute teachers, and that between the ISD and the World Public, we get something of that started here in the county, which again, that only benefits us because it keeps us going. Again, it's really cool because we haven't had to cancel a route this year,
there's still a few weeks.
There's still time, but we got the drivers. So.
If I recall, is this bus system and Fenmore to be a service for?
That's the next one.
Okay.
That's first year.
Yeah. You're close. That's the next contract. But yes. And so then.
How does this affect the overall cost and the cost service?
I haven't calculated anything right now. I would have to pull their census to see which drivers are at which tier. I think it's a reasonable increase.
Well, we think if we're voting an increase, the ballpark is going to go up 5 to 7,000 instead of up 10,000 to 20,000. Just a ballpark idea of going to approve something.
Right. I can't just throw out a number. I apologize.
You do it all the time, Cassie. Come on.
Well, I throw out numbers, but I am reasonably confident in saying if you give me a few minutes, I can probably.
No, maybe we can grab that. That way we know the increased cost of this. And this is paid through.
It's all. Well, it's general. It's general.
It's general.
No, general fund and special ed.
Title.
Yeah, so I'll give you. So even if we didn't do any of the yellow, okay, you're still going to have an increase because you still have people on like a tier one or two, so they're automatically going to. So those, so what really comes down to is a number of people that would be the new monies onto that next tier up. Okay, so that's one thing to be aware of. There, so you're in all honesty. I mean, if we had just like, for example, 10 people that were the drivers talking about $10 a day increase in that times, I think they run about 6 hours, so that's $60 a day.
That's less of a concern than it is the how that's going to calculate, because that's a real number that you can calculate. And
that's
going up. It's not that we don't understand
that. Yeah. Again, it's a little bit more complicated because that's based on salaries. And as you get more drivers into the upper tiers, that point a little bit more.
Yeah. But right now, at least we have a ballpark of where we're sitting of an increased cost right now. We understand that that's going to be flexible down the road based on the rest of the project.
I guess my opinion, looking at it, going from 27.75 is a pretty minor change.
Yeah, I was curious how much it's going to cost.
And the other thing it illustrates is retention.
Yeah.
And that's been something that we have been really unable to reach that mark where we're able to say we have since when we went to Mets, we started on a new plane, right?
Yeah.
So now we're on tier six, which is really pretty phenomenal, I think.
Yeah, it's not that isn't understood. It's not that we don't think that, but we have.
Absolutely. I hear you.
I'm
but
just happy I got.
I just want to say, if I'm putting my name to it, I want to know, like, how much increases.
So, the spend that we have with them is right about $1 million on salaries and benefits. So, you're talking about $6,000 increase on 0.75.
That's just on the
$6,000.
Yeah.
At a million?
On the 0.75 services, because
we're already paying the 27% now, so the increase is
an additional 6,000.
It's just another
0.75.
That's all we need to know. All right, thank you for that information.
I was trying to remember that. It was always about $1 million spent. That's why I went over there quick to confirm that.
Okay. I'm sorry. Retention helps to be crossed. Oh, for sure.
It's
for sure. And again, I know she's already saying it, but the department is just totally flipped over. Side note, I mean, the driver today, 10 years of experience, he's retiring June 12th, and the vehicle, you're going through light, the vehicle starts moving, so she's moving, the vehicle stops. No mark on the front bumper, you know, but she's like, I can't stop just that fast. All of a sudden, we're going in the socks.
Has there been an increase in those incidents, or does it just seem like there is?
It just seems like there is right now. I was thinking the same thing.
I saw someone on Facebook
it's like her third minor.
It is.
And I don't recall hearing any fire.
I know.
And so that makes me think
my perception is a lot more action going on around the world.
And I think
the incidences are being reported properly now, whereas before they may have been occurring and you guys weren't hearing about them necessarily. And I think a good number of the incidences are not necessarily the fault of our drivers.
No.
A good portion of them I was under the guidance.
Last week they were going to left turn lane to turn. And that dump truck was right on their butt, and so the tail wave of that bus went out, caught that right corner as the bus was making that turn. And so it's like pretty scary, but yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, oh my gosh, it feels like it's just constantly happening.
It's the same thing with vehicle accidents in Monroe in general. You go on and you go on to Monroe County, and you're like, the accident's here.
That's because I have a theory about that. That's because a lot of drivers end training extension out now.
I think it's harder to pay attention when you're on your phone, though, to driving. It gets in the way sometimes. And you're trying to play on your phone, and then you start to drive.
In fact, I followed a vehicle a couple of weeks ago going down Elm Street, and I could smell the marijuana from out of the
I was talking to Patty on Saturday because she was at my kind of walk stop, and she indicated to me that what they used to do for training bus drivers was taking several weeks, and now she's able to do that in about 3 weeks. It's faster to get trained bus drivers on the road and doing the job rather than sitting in training and us paying trainers more as well.
We have people that pay from other districts to come to us.
Well, you bring up a great point because today, so the driver, because she hit, so she couldn't drive, she has to get a drug test done. And the other person who's on the bus is a certified driver, so she's able to hop on and go over and finish take the bus back. You know, but we have those people, and that's why it's that be able to turn around. What's happened, though, is that as they're going through that system right there, they may not be, they may start driving, but they're on the bus with a veteran driver still, because if we don't keep these people, keep people working, they leave us. And we can't afford to do that. And so it's just, it's a good spot. The other highlight on this one, we'll put this one to bed, is that Patty is actually getting opportunities to go to other districts on their time, you know, to go and work on about what's going on. It's kind of like, it's one of those smiling moments for us because
it is.
It's everything is being addressed there.
So, are the van drivers on assigned routes and they work according to the assigned route?
Nope.
Or they're just going?
They have assigned areas.
Assigned areas and they're working fire day.
No. So, like in the morning, if you were up and driving about at about 6:30 in the morning, you would see one over here at the gas station, or not the gas station, where the old Kmart's at that parking lot. They'd be sitting right there, and what happens is they were just waiting for a phone for the radio call saying, "I need you to go pick up so and so," because they end up missing the bus. But no, they're
sitting at St. Mary's Park.
So they'll be sitting there, but then once they're we get all the kids into the system, they're back at them, or they're done, and then they'll come back on. We'll use them for if we have students that are homeless and are living outside of our area rather than sending a bus all the way to go get them. We use the van to go get our students that are homeless.
Yeah, we had that one discipline during where we were going to pick them.
Yep, we did that there. So the vans are really, for our school district, most unique thing we've got going because you hear other districts that are just kind of jealous over that ability that we have right there to have up our kids when unique things are happening. Our next item is First Vehicle. So I wanted to get this. I've been working with First Vehicle. So they are First Vehicle Trans Dev. You can probably come up with about three other names for this company, but they've been with us since the early 90s and providing the bus and vehicle maintenance for the rural public schools. And in the past, their contract was where they would take and analyze your fleet and say, okay, based on the age of your fleet, number of vehicles you have in your fleet, It's going to cost us, as an example, $750,000, and that's parts, labor, overhead, all this cost, and that's what we're going to bill you for. And we really didn't like that mechanism, so this current, right now, we're having them bill us directly for parts, so we take on that risk rather than allowing TransDev to make the money, because if they budget $120,000 for parts and it comes in at $80,000, well, they just took $40,000 home, okay, for that year. We said it did. So it's right now this year. So right now we're paying for parts as problems happen on that on the buses. We have a very strong management system out there with Karen and then our three techs. And so what we asked for was to be able to have, kind of like we do with Mets, a simple contract where we're going to just pay for the services of these three techs and for Karen to monitor, to run the system for us, and which will allow us to be able to bring in other buses from other schools. Okay, but the way the contract was pre-written, it was very difficult to do that. And so what we've come up with was we really wanted to make it even more simple, but because they have a purchasing power of a national company right here, we couldn't. They go, you're going to lose money if you don't use our purchasing program. National. So up at the top here on this first paper right there, you'll see that those are the things that stays with TransDev, okay? And so they're going to take on, and that is built into these numbers over here on the blue page, okay? So anything up at the top is built into these numbers there. So the uniforms, computers, diagnostic laptop expiring, those copier expenses right now. They have their text and Karen there, cell phone for Karen, office supplies, PPE, so anything that's safety, equipment-related, boot allowances, payroll services, insurances, environmental services. So, for example, you can't just take the oil and dump it out on the gravel roads anymore. Okay, some farmers, well, that day and age is long gone. Kept the dust down, but can't do that anymore. We've asked for is for that service truck, an on-call cell phone, that because we already have cell phones, copier expense, so we control that side of it, laptop. So those are things that we will have, so that when it's all really said and done, it only those top things is what TransDev is billing us for, which is in the blue. Okay, everything else is underneath us. And so when we look at updating, which we're going to talk about our copiers later on, that's just one of those items that's automatically updated out there. Moved them on August 1st of last year with all the hardware, software and hardware parts, tooling. So there are certain tools that we have to buy because it's unique to our system, so we buy it. Otherwise, as you know, a mechanic, they're part of being a mechanic, but you have your own tools. So we don't buy mechanics' tools, but if there's something that is unique to one of our buses, and that, for example, international requires you to have, we buy it. Or the jacks that are in the facility, things of that sort. The next part down there is this. When, and this is the biggest difference, when we would have a bus come into our system, mainly from the ISD and or from St. Mary's, what was happening is we were still being charged our rate, and all we were getting was a $5 kickback. Okay. Now what will happen is that rate that we're paying per hour will be shoved over to the other school, and that's where we start to save money. Okay, so we actually see it all back. And that's how TransDev over the time, that's just the way the contract was constructed, and it did. The other big savings was this. Is we would always get hit with
non-contract labor and non-contract parts.
Yep. Yeah, so that was always a big thing. So non-contract parts. So, for example, those with non-contract would be brake pads, for example, and or the non-contract services was the fixture I sent you of the bumper on the bus. Fixing that, we should have been non-contract. Now it's built in. So that's part of those buildings. So when we really see this, that it's they did bring up their wages a little bit to make so that they're in tune more to industry standard. But when we look at analyzing this contract, it's a much better spot for us to be at because it just spells it right out. Here's what we're paying for. We know that next year we'll pay $607,000 for labor out there for the management of the services. How we can drive that number down, again, is now we begin building relations with other schools and bringing in their buses to be worked on. Erie Mace is an easy-peasy one, simply because theirs is a lease fleet. It has their gas buses, and so the PMs are a lot easier. And for where they're located, it just makes good sense. Down the road, an item would be another option right there. But we're also going to play in the sandbox because Zorn's garage is still open. So I'm not going to do any harm to Dale and those guys.
I was going to say, aren't they? Yeah.
They're still open.
And they service
the Ida and the Mason buses. But when that day and age comes to a stop, then we'll have a conversation to be ready. But we had to get the contract in a position where we were ready to be able to do that. So why do that?
Yeah, why do that? In the realm of a public education system, why do that? We've had all these busing things, we've had all this going on trying to do our own transportation. Why expand into a service garage for buses?
Yep. So that if we don't, for example, if we don't have to add that fourth tech, we can go and add 8 more buses that need, for example, 300 hours of maintenance done to them annually as an example, $100 an hour, that's $30,000 off of our bill. So that's a way that you can keep those guys working. We don't need as much time, and it's good for us. One of the other areas right now, I'll have a conversation with the city. For example, we have a licensed electrician who's going to retire at the end of this year. Okay? The city has a part-time electrician. It is hard to find electricians out there. So we have to actually partner and try and find people to pay them well, and we have to do joint ventures. You do it with public entities. You don't go into the private world. You try to do it with the public, so like the city and or the town or with like Erie Mason or these other schools. Some of these other schools, back to their size, they don't have the capabilities. And so, again, if we can keep our people working and good money in their hands, great. The other side flip is that for us, well, that's another way that you're giving like that department pay raises too. More serious.
You're covering your overhead, basically.
Right.
So it says that adding techs as workload is required for a potential revenue center. So when we're talking about the 3 techs, we're just talking about the current load that we have. So more staff will be required.
Not necessarily, because
3 techs are going to do everybody's classes.
Oh no, you don't do everybody's.
Well, we were talking about adding, you know, I'm at the revenue center.
It's a numbers.
In order to be a revenue center, you have to have someone else to drive your own self.
So with the numbers game is with having an old fleet, it's harder for us to make that next step. Our fleet, we're going to have to do something. My older buses are getting older. So we're going to have to start changing and getting some new buses. Well, it's a lot different doing a PM job in a new bus than it is an old bus, right? And so that's the mindset there. When we're talking about an Erie Mason or Ida, Erie Mason has 9 buses. You're not talking huge fleets. Ida's at 14, I think.
I'm just reading what it says, and techs.
And they put that in there as just an opportunity
to know down the road, as you take on more, that more techs will need to be included.
But we're not going to make our costs. We won't add a fourth tech to make our cost more. We'd have to have the revenue support. You have to go back to your first page. Okay. That built into that number is uniforms. It is cell phone. It is office supplies. It's insurances. It's all the environment. It's every single thing. Is built into
the general manager's wages?
Into both of those. Okay? So
for each individual.
Not necessarily for each. Well, so for example, none of the 4 of them are not going to have environmental services.
But
So
they're
I'm
not
going
to have. So.
I'm just trying to, because on the first page, there's the dollars and numbers.
Right.
It's just telling us what pieces are
there. Right.
So I get to the second page, and the second page is where dollars and numbers are.
Correct.
So I understand the contract, everything is in this category. The, I understand that we're getting our parts separately from the contract.
Right.
Monroe's going to take on some of these other things. So when I look at that and I say, how much are we paying for himself? And I would have expected to see, like you do with other contracts, an overall dollar amount for the services they're providing. Instead, we're seeing a general manager and technician. So there lies my question. So if all of this stuff's included, you say it's included in here, so that's not their wages?
That's how much right there for this.
So why is it broke down for general manager
and technician? Because they did it that manner, because we had to have...
It just looks like we're paying staff only.
Yeah. And,
because we can't do that. That makes no sense.
Right. It's, but that's where if you go over to the far right corner, or side right there, okay, and you look there, and that's overtime rate, okay? Yeah. Well, the overtime rate is $74 an hour for that tech. The... If you take and do the regular hourly wage, you know, and divide it through all the numbers, it's going to be a higher wage. Why? Because inside that number is going to be the environmental services, it's going to be their insurance, it's going to be all of it. So what they did is they just took all of this and then all the stuff right across here and got pushed into that number there.
So for a contract, it would make sense to break that up and say the service on the contract would be this, including a general manager at this cost and a technician at this cost, but rather than saying these are the two employees, they're making $91.42 an hour and $66.91 an hour, and that included in that is going to be all of this. So you're saying that's basically their benefit package.
So
I'm trying to, yeah. You know, I would like to see a dollar amount that would explain all of this stuff included.
So
the total amount in the contract is these wages.
Total amount of the contract, the services they're going to provide in the rural public schools, which is access to all of their all that stuff, is $607,000.
Written up in a contract as four positions.
As four positions.
All the other contracts.
You can't have the services without the people.
Right.
So, I mean, in the past...
So, and the contract is only for people.
Contract is for... the contract is for the people. It's for the access to the TransDev buying power. It is for their waste disposal. The contract is for their... there's also, you got your health benefits, you got retirement, you got your, obviously they're a business, so they're going to have a profit margin there. That's what that $600,000
So where's all that at? So why don't we have the people, like you just said, versus people?
Second, well, we can break that down.
Is access to the buying power, what's their buying power, just because they're a global company?
Yeah.
And they have that, they're not part of like a Bible or something like that. They have their own special...
Well,
and then the waste disposal, I would think that would be a separate
one. Well, we've had that from them before, too. So
yeah.
I
think their contracts up. Were, their last contract was more in-depth than this, if I recall.
Yes, I have.
I probably have it. I just didn't dig it up. I should have dug it
up. I was just trying to make it.
Sorry. Yeah, I just want to see it all put together
yeah.
in the contract so we can see how this breaks down.
So in the conversations that we've had with them, we wanted to move from just a fixed rate spread over 12 months to being billed for, like, the hours that are worked. And in order to do that, they have to account for the other costs in the rate that they're going to charge us. So that's why it's displayed this way versus and in the previous contracts, I don't think we had a specific dollar amount that we were paying for each person.
No.
It was, didn't matter.
It was just this is the
we
cost
had,
that they were going to bill.
It just
so
said
we,
personnel.
We had discussion. We were
we're having discussions with them about changing the model that we're using since we've pieced out the parts piece, which that was covering a lot of what was in the previous contract.
That was last year.
Right. So, but last year we just did a 1-year extension. We
right.
revamped the whole contract, whereas now that we've done that and we do like how it's going, we had discussed with them about being able to rebuild the hours that are being worked. And in order to do that, they have to include a rate, not what they're exactly paying the employee, but that's going to cover all the other costs that they're covering.
So I think maybe what, since you say we're revamping the whole company, I think when
that
we go back and look
maybe
at the
a
two.
Choice of words, but.
I just use words. You know, so maybe look at the two contracts because waste disposal. Why would that be in someone's like salary wage plus including?
But that's the thing. It's not that it's in their wage. That's the contract mechanism for us to pay them is based on the hours that their staff are working for us. That's the mechanism of the contract to cover the costs.
Never seen
instead of being direct
the contract itself as the wages of the employee. Because when
But it's not.
But it appears that way.
But,
so can we make it not appear that way?
Matt's is the same way. Matt's charges 27.75%.
Right.
So we look at their cost of Matt's. This is the company has done. They just said, this is we're disclosing to you exactly what's me. Matt's varies a little because we had staff there. But
so instead of asking them for the straight staff wage plus an admin fee, what they typically do is just give you a rate for the hours that the staff are working in your facility that covers all their costs.
And the 91.42.
I get how that's confusing a little bit the way it's displayed.
It's not like that person is getting 91.42 an hour. It's TransDev is getting that 91.42 per labor hour.
Yeah.
And then they're dispersing it in the way that it needs to be.
I've never seen a contract written up that way, so probably what would be beneficial for me is if I can locate my folder. You have it to pull up last year's contract.
But the other part of this is, I'm showing you what we're looking at here, and so this is still in a draft. I've got to get you regular.
This is just their proposal. This isn't the final
contract. So maybe that would be helpful.
And so maybe that'll bring some clarity. I think.
I wanted to show you though where we are making progress on
these
this.
Numbers of what we were looking at with them, but it's not. This isn't the final document that we would have to approve.
No.
This is just their proposal based on the discussions that Mr. Shaw had.
So maybe if you guys pull your stuff, I'm looking for my notes, and then.
When both of us, like I said, I talked with Jason before I came in, they're still crafting. And the funny thing, it was interesting, there's two other districts asked for the same contract. We're come on that. You'll be seeing that board briefs. We will have this in a position where workshops in June, so that way we can hopefully have this approved at the end of June. All right. Hey, the elevators. Love elevators, people.
Going up.
Coming down.
So a couple months back, we asked the board to hurry up and vote on the elevator modernization, which at that time it was $361,000 some change for the oldest part of that upgrade. So since then, the architects, engineers have surveyed the areas and looked at all this stuff that we have to do to get these elevators up to code that Otis wouldn't do. And that bid came in, and that's going to the board tomorrow for $604,000 through grant construction. And a big part of that is the new law requires new sumps to be put in below. So if there's any hydraulic leaks, anything, the oil goes in there, gets pulled up into a separator, and the oil goes here, the water goes back into our just our regular drain. So that's a big cost that we have to do. There's also new regulation where we have to have a heat pump, which is actually the air conditioned mechanical room. So we have to keep a certain temperature for the equipment to stay at a certain temperature, a variance there. There'll be upgraded phones, access control, cameras, above and beyond the actual Otis part of that. So this is really just everything that Otis doesn't do to the elevator that they're requiring us to do to get the complete modernization of those elevators. And just to give you an example, we have already told our staff only allow the elevator usage for students. So if you don't have to use the elevator, take the stairs. Because the middle school has broke down a couple times since you guys have actually approved that. And they're getting to their last leg. So we really need to get this done. I did ask Kohler Architect again, if we were to just go out and put in a brand new elevator, we're probably looking at north of $1 million at each location. So this does give us another 15 to 20 year extension on the life of these elevators. It'll be closer to about $900,000 when it's said and done. 361 was approved, another 604,000 to do the ancillary work. Some mechanical. I think at the middle school, there's a couple electrical panels that have to be upgraded to accommodate the new elevator upgrades. So that's what that 600,000 is to complete that project this summer.
So you just said 300,000 has already been allocated plus the six.
You so voted on the. Yep. Yep.
So this stuff comes from the state on the new requirements for the elevator. Is that what I heard? And so the state sets the requirements for all those things that we discussed.
Yep.
How does cameras fit in that piece?
Well, I don't know that the cameras per se are a state requirement. It's just if you're going to redo all that.
Yes.
Yeah. So, well, I don't know if it's phones. Like, for instance, you have to have now state law says you have to have a phone not in the elevator, outside. So let's say you're handicapped and the elevator doesn't work. You can call someone to come and let you know that, hey, I got to get down. I can't. So there's some stuff that Otis and Kohler go through, and they kind of come up with a list of everything we have to have. And Otis says, I can do this. And they say, okay, you got to have these things done, and that's what this bid is.
So this is coming on the site taking fund. Where are we having that? Correct.
Yeah. For the year. Yeah. The money are there for it. It's what the...
We've been preserving quite a bit of that funding once we've accomplished a lot of things that we would have paid out of the taking fund. So typically when we HVAC upgrades, that would have came out of the sinking fund. We were able to do the entire high school with the bond. We've been preserving that to see what we're able to get done with the bond. And now this elevator.
This was always part of the plan, too, to wait till the bond was done, wear out the elevator as much as possible with all the contractors, and then come in and do the upgrade. So, what's that?
No problem. And the middle school really is the one that's hurting a lot because it's going down and down. So it's one of those items where, honestly, at the end of the day, there's sort of no choice here. The elevator goes down, we can't fix it. We're down for months, we're going to have problems. And it just, fortunately, by approving what you did here a couple months ago, allowed Otis then to get down to the timeline of the order, and so that we get this done this summer.
What percentage of the sinking fund balance do we maintain back for any kind of major event?
It's been a while. I think we're usually lately been well over $1 million. And with the bond, it's been more because our focus has been the bond work.
Bond, we usually kept between half $1 million and $1 million in there. We never fully spent it down just to have that cushion in case something catastrophic. We've been able to build that up the last couple of years, like I said, with not having as much out of the sinking fund because we were doing all these bond projects.
Well, yeah,
there's no state requirement as far as what you have to maintain.
I'm just saying for a business aspect, what was the standard? Because we have a lot of sinking fund stuff coming up, too. So that's going to take a big hit here, and I just want to make sure that we're not depleting it to such a level that, you know, we're maintaining what was typically done. So if it was typically around $1 million, then I just was anticipating that we would
say. Is there anything on this list that gets maybe pushed because of this, or can you see it pretty much?
There's, as far as the elevator work?
No, the same question. Yeah, there's nothing working on this.
Yeah. Yeah, like, for instance, we wanted to do Arborwood North parking lot, and that won't get done. We wanted to do the Manor parent loop. We're going to wait and do that with the bond the next summer. So there's some things that, yep.
The Manor loop, that would be by the city. So wait for the next summer. Not paying it.
Well, that's
definitely
great.
Yep.
And that's our saving.
That's our saving.
What was the cost of that?
That's something.
We haven't approved
it yet.
See my population.
So, I want to say eight spaces for you to understand with the saving fund that we, went to the administration, we're not going to let it drop below that $500,000 or $1 million because of that. And so it's pacing out like that. So that's why there's some projects. You might be on the list for this year. It doesn't get done. And it just moves further down the year.
So prioritizing stuff is part of what we look at in the past. Yeah. Why is something prioritized over something else?
Yeah.
Obviously, an elevator repair we can completely understand because that is a whole thing of itself. Maybe all bells and whistles, I don't know, but, you know, it's obviously what
And just only because you threw out the million versus 900,000, what Mr. Payne said earlier was $1 million per curio. So that would, if we do completely brand new elevators in both the high school and middle school, $2 million.
Yeah.
And we're just trying $1 million to just modernize
it. Yeah. That's why you said
to do together would be the one, and so essentially it would have been two.
Is this something like possibly Campbell, are you replacing the voters for the drive?
They're completely, not everything's getting, if we look at the original parts that Otis is doing, most of it is getting replaced, like the cage, the shell staying, but they're going to make it all look nice. Some of the mechanical, the motors, all of that, if it doesn't meet code or doesn't look like it's going to last the past 15 or 20 years, it was part of this replacement.
Yeah. Control system.
The whole control system gets replaced, yeah.
Unfortunately, right now, what we do, we're going to do anything, it's just sad. I mean, on this project, we got graduate year one general contractor. No one else. Nobody's going to do a great job.
They just wanted to attend it, the pre-bid meeting, but then notified us that they would not be able to bid based on the
a lot of subcontracting, so there's not a lot of profit probably for like a big speaker, somebody come in and be in that confined areas, and the time frame's so short. Yeah. And I'll be honest with you, for elevators, I would want someone like Grant to do it because he's going to make sure it's done right. And when you're talking elevators, it's such an inconvenience for the schools to have an outage.
They really,
especially in the middle school hall. Coming down.
Yeah, we heard that today.
It's a lot of extra work.
They were. So now it's like get the equipment there and leave it there because we can't afford for them to go down when they're so close to the school year. All right, David, copier, refresh.
Okay, so this tomorrow as well, we're going to ask the board to approve refreshing our copier fleet. Last year was the end of our five-year contract, and we extended it. We didn't upgrade or anything. We just left it alone. We wanted to try some things with Print Shop to see if we could save a little money. It actually worked pretty well. So I don't know if you guys, if you read the thing I included that we worked with UTech on, but basically we're paying about $280,000 a year for copier services. That includes the equipment. It's more of a rental program where we don't do any capital purchase. It's just a per-click fee for X amount of clicks for the year, and that comes up to $280,000. Normally, there's a thing called overages. If you print more than that, the color seems to be a new thing. Each year has been $20,000-$30,000 in overages. So now you're a little over $300,000 a year. Well, the reason we postponed last year is everything was escalating hardware-wise. The costs were astronomical. We can't afford it right now. So this year didn't get much better. So if we were to replace our complete fleet just as it is now and print the same, we're looking at close to $70,000 a year more. Just to replace everything as is, print the same amount, and that doesn't count your overages.
That's so then, the same
essentially. If we would just go out, well, yeah, them or just anyway, if we would go out and buy new copiers, you're looking at that extra cost. So what we did is we kind of, based on the theory of using the print shop a little more, we asked to get to reduce our fleet in the field. So for instance, if you're at Manor Elementary and you went in the lounge, there would be two copiers. We're proposing you put one copier in, and those larger jobs, we're asking the teachers to submit to the print shop. Last fall, we started a new print form where teachers can submit print requests, and we tried to staff it a little better, adding some extra resources from 24/7 to allow next-day turnaround, and it seemed to work well. Zach's team's been doing great. We've been keeping up. So by doing that, everything we send to the print shop is pretty much 50% the cost, cut it in half. So by reducing the amount of the fleet and sending more jobs to the print shop, we can get all new equipment but still stay at that close to that 280,000 mark, which was our goal. So that's what we're recommending the board is to refresh our fleet, just not as much, send all the color and large jobs to the print shop, and that will allow the teachers still to get what they need, just do it a different way. So we're not asking them to reduce anything, but anything large would have to be sent to the print shop, or anything in color.
So that's going to be a big paradigm shift for a lot of teachers.
However, I don't know if you remember when I was a teacher here, I was excellent at using your print shop. And I loved them because, like, for music teachers, printing your programs
huge printing order, but it takes a lot of advanced printing, right? Because you have to, like, know your, not just your concert lit, but you have to know what's going to be on the front cover, the order of everything. You have to know how it's going to be organized. You have to send it out far enough in advance that it can be printed and then returned to you before your concert night. Similarly, classroom teachers with assessment packets or whatever it's going to be, you have to know, like, you have to add that to your timeline, right? So that's a big shift because a lot of teachers are used to that immediacy of, I have my planning period now, I need it next period, I'm going to roll on down to the copy room, sing, done, here we go. So what can be done to help anticipate needing that period?
So the first thing is I took Darla's idea, and we're doing ice cream for the teachers every Friday.
Did you submit your orders?
So we anticipated that. So what we did starting in September is we talked to the principals, included reports of their printing every month. And we've had some great turnaround. Middle school, Manor, Arborwood, they've almost went from three jobs internally and one job to print shop to three to print shop and one internally. So we've made a paradigm shift already for a majority of our schools. We've worked with principals to get the word out. Mr. Shaw had a conversation at a meeting to let him know this is what we're trying to do. Because at the bottom line is we don't want to take anything away. Because if we don't make this change, something else has to go.
Right.
So at least this way we can still give you color. We just have to do it a different way. But maybe also have our techs, if you're going out to Raisinville to fix something, it's in the afternoon after the mail run, check the box and drop off a print. Because we're trying to do same day, deliver to the classroom, do different things. Mr. Shaw even said, hey, if you're a principal and you're by the ad building, stop back and see if there's anything at your building, take it back with you.
In these conference rooms, so when people are walking out there, did you remember to check print shop before you build it? And so that way, if you do have something you put over here, and, you know, it can get back to you. Because they turn stuff around and down real quick. So it is that paradigm, but at the end of the day, it's a way that we can keep great copiers in there and keep our and control that cost. Mm-hmm. And, but we did not say at all that you can't copy.
Right.
Okay?
And like,
you know, we're limited on the number of copies.
And I do want to say this. Granted, I was here a long time ago, but they do magnificent things in that print shop. Mm-hmm. They really do. It's not just, I'm going to print this and they're going to fold it in half. They, like, those amazing, like, tear-away, like, laminated on one end. They do spiral-bound stuff. They do big posters. Like, amazing things that they do down there. It's just, it's that timeline shift.
Yep.
And, like, that's going to be hard to have it for some teachers.
And that's the most reason, you're exactly right, why people send it to their local printers. They wait the last minute and, like, what is printed here? Well, paper's expensive. And the other thing is we did Find Me Printing. So before, I'd send something to the print shop. You'd send something. Maybe I stopped it. Oh, I screwed up. Let me send another and throw this away. Well, now you have to swipe your badge. It'll print right then. So we've saved on paper as well last year. So we're trying to do little things that don't really, a little inconvenient, but you still get what you need. Otherwise, we're going to have to make drastic cuts because copy and printers are going up just like everything else. And that's the only other thing we can do is to reduce services. So this is something hopefully that'll work that isn't too inconvenient, but still give everything you need.
So,
is
there a discussion about selling our current equipment at one point?
Our copiers?
Yeah. When you replace the equipment, selling it, I thought there was a discussion.
If you lease something, we would have to possibly either own it or buy it out.
But
this is rental, no?
So when that rental, with our current rental, is done, they're taking it all away.
The nice thing about this, though, is we're a school district, so things change sometimes. And it's nice to say, you know what, take that copier back, or we need an extra one here. Mm-hmm. You don't, like with a capital lease, you own that. It's not an easy thing to do to just change that. So this does give us a little bit of flexibility.
So is it a capital lease? Is it rental?
It's a rental.
And so we're going straight.
And I'll be honest with you, they really pushed hard to lease this because, and we said we're not comfortable with it, so they're going to eat that interest cost because they're going to have to, or they're going to have to pay cash.
They have to maintain all the equipment.
They have to buy this capital purchase. So that was a show of good faith by them to help us out a little, because we would have had to get a lease. Cassie would have had to, it would have been another cost for us.
I think the thing about being garlic is that there's, last 3 years, different moments in time, people made comments, should the print shop be open? Should we keep the print shop, not have the print shop? And that's been a conversation, sounds like in this district for a long time. And when Dave was talking about the print shop and doing everything down there for basically half the cost, like, well, the print shop can't go away because we already have mechanisms to get documents to buildings. We already have, and when we think about the staff, if they're not working, doing printing, they're doing something else. So it's not like they're not working. So that it makes sense for us to.
Print shops are a great resource, but I'll be honest with you, they're a headache. So if you're don't have the time to deal with it, put a copy in every building, and it's going to cost me a little more, but I have to deal with it.
Because there was a discussion on third party out copying services
at one point.
That's a while back.
That must have been way well back. Yeah. No, so, that's where we're also very careful. We don't want to infringe on any of our companies either.
Right, because this is not an intent turn the print shop into a revenue center. It is intent to only supply the public schools. Am I correct?
There's been a few cases since I've worked here, maybe 10 times, where the ISD will say, hey, I got this really big job. Could you print it for us and we'll pay you for your cost? That's happened a few times, but we don't go out and solicit that at all.
Are there other
schools do that, to answer your question. A lot of print shops that are open, they make T-shirts.
Everybody into one to say, if they know that Monroe Public Schools has this fabuloso print shop that can do all of this, are they going to solicit for our services? And is that something that Monroe intends to even tap on besides maybe an ISD or something?
We would have to see what they're offering, because right now our goal is to satisfy our teachers.
Yes,
the answer is we'd have to wait and see later. Well, because I wouldn't want to take it on. But let's say, for instance, we are sort of like the first vehicle.
So the biggest difference on that would be it's back to logistics. If you take on, for example, like the Harry Mason and the busing, well, they're going to leave a bus at our shop because they go straight from LaSalle. So instead of having the driver come all over, go to Mason, get on the bus, they're going to come to our shop, get on the bus, and that's where the car is parked, because then they can bring buses back and forth. On the printing, now you're into a big old logistical nightmare. And so that's why it has to be a unique situation there. Now, we're just trying to, all we're presenting to you right now is a way that we're trying to hold tight at $280,000 cost for copying in the Monroe Public Schools next year. That's all we're saying. We're doing it through renting, a per click fee, using the print shop as our number one focus, because we can do everything down there a lot less. I mean, even this building is going to be less copiers and printers, too.
So we're dropping this. Instead of every office having a copier, there'll be three in the whole thing. So everybody's going to feel the pain a little bit. Otherwise, you're going to be back at the full fleet, and that's $100,000 a year. Right now we have 1.5. So I'm thinking what we'll probably do is try to have Joey not do the mail run, and somebody, we posted for a mail run. The reason I'm waiting is in case we have people that want to go to part-time, instead of saying you don't have any hours, we try to say, hey, would you like to do the mail run and still keep 20 hours or whatever? But to try to keep it around 2, what we try to do is back train, like help desk and 24/7. So if we get real busy for 3 days, somebody can jump over and help. Because the problem is if you hire too many, then there's times where you might not need them. So.
One more question. What is the general technology capital budget?
General technology.
That's what is listed that this money's coming out of. The district technology capital budget.
Yeah, the district. So instead of the tech millage, it's by the voters. This would be our district general fund's tech slice.
Yeah, because when I went through all of these, so there was that one, technology millage, and there was the other one is the actual millage itself.
It's probably just the way it was written. It's probably just the way it was written. Millage is millage. There's a tech budget for the district, and there's tech millage, which are both technically general fund.
Yeah.
But
just when there's language changes, it makes
it's really just to confuse you and make you ask more questions.
Very good job, so I have to ask you a question if you succeeded.
I just like talking to you guys, so I try to throw some different words out.
It would help if we could use the same terminology for everyone.
You know, I respect that because I ask our architects to do the same thing.
I know. The same purpose, but the state is really funny about.
We'll try to do a better job, but it's technically too much.
I truly didn't know that, Cassie.
Oh, yeah, they're very particular how I said it.
Because to me, there's one bucket, and, you know, I'm looking at how that bucket's being utilized based on our previous conversation, and that was all about the enhancement millage. And so I'm looking for this, where is money coming out of the enhancement millage, and it's not.
Oh, but the bucket's made of teaspoons. That's what you got.
In your big bucket, you have all these little tiny buckets, and the state wants to know exactly what we're doing with that tiny little teaspoon that was the $70 million.
So it's all pretty much the same.
It's all general fund. It's just different pieces of the general fund.
General technology fund, which is the same as the general
in
fund.
The general fund,
yeah.
Yes.
So this is all general fund.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't see it out.
So, Ms. Payne, you got one more that you can take.
One more.
So, this next one's an easy one. It's we're to help us get ready for the fall. We have a couple technology purchases related to buildings. So, this purchase for $86,000 is going to. We'll start at Arborwood South first, where the ISD classrooms are on the east side of the 200 hall. We have to purchase new projectors and get them installed in some of the speakers to get them prepped for classrooms starting when school returns. So that's really all it is we left all the main mounts, but we have to just put smart boards back in. Most of the smart boards we have, so we're good there, but the projectors we don't. When we took them out, we used them as spares, so when projectors broke, that building due to the asbestos in the ceiling has to be short throws, which are mounted on the walls. So we need to purchase those for that. And then also some speakers were bad. We're going to upgrade the speakers that are mounted on the walls and the installation. So that's what that purchase is, just to get those classrooms ready to go for the fall. Waterloo.
Classrooms?
What's that?
Waterloo.
These are Arborwood South classrooms, where all of this, the GSRP or the Head Start classrooms were.
So the 200
already
at Arborwood South now houses the school programs. So we need to have the technology in those classrooms that those general education teachers want.
Is this coming?
And when the ISD. This one's 86 for Waterloo and for Arborwood South. What's that? We have the smart boards, we just don't have the projectors, so we're going to order. And then the installation and some of the speakers. Now, at Waterloo, we're going to do those devices were taken out. So instead of putting old projectors back in and paying for power and all the mounts, what we're going to do is put in new smart boards, and we're going to pilot them there so they're a little more costly, but they mount on the wall. You don't have to put a mounted projector. They also come with an adjustable mount. So for teachers that have the little guys in young fives or kindergarten, you can move it down. If you're fourth grade, you can lift it up. So we're going to pilot those to see how they do, but that's the cost that's going to happen for Waterloo to get those classrooms back up. So it's really just classroom dedicated hardware and installation.
And so that's just for those two schools?
Just for those two schools. No, because what we're next year, if the millage passes, when the millage passes, it's going to be time for a classroom refresh. So we didn't want to spend too much money on Arborwood because our thought was maybe we put in TVs, we try something different. We figured we would pilot this at Waterloo. It's less classrooms. We wouldn't to put the mounts in the ceiling and pay for power. And by the time you buy a projector, it eats up almost half the cost of the smart board. So in this case, we can get a nice mount, get a new smart board in, see how often they're used and how well they're used those mounts before we did it on a district-wide deployment.
So the pilot is for the mounts, not the smart boards and the projectors.
It's a little of both, because right now in an elementary classroom, we have to put the projector in the ceiling. Those projectors last between 3 and 4 years, depending on how much they're used, the bulbs. We replace the bulbs, clean the filters. But this would be pretty much an interactive TV. It's a smart board, but it's interactive TV. There's no projector. So you save all that money, but yet the projector or the smart board costs a little more.
So this is effective over this school year. You would anticipate repeating this in all of the schools?
Possibly. We want to look at this as a possible option at the other elementaries next year. If it...
Have a dollar amount.
A dollar amount?
Not now.
No. Oh, we'll have a dollar
before
amount.
Before you even...
Oh, yeah, we will.
Because if you're piloting this, that means there's a projected idea that you would anticipate that this would be the new project. And I'm looking at if this is $686,000 for only a small portion of our board south and
well,
Waterloo,
it would be 50 some for just Waterloo. But remember, part of this the reason we're doing this is it's brand new ceilings. For me to put an old projector in that possibly wouldn't work, pay an electrician to add the power, buy another mount because these are 2x2 ceilings. You look at, let's say that's $800. Well, take that off the $2,000 of the smart board. Now we had to do it either way, and this was smarter money. And it also allowed us to try something different.
I was sitting here thinking about when you're talking about this and all of this technology is to improve grades and educate our students. Do we ever look at a return on investment on any of these kind of things? Look at it as a, this is everything and this is the end result. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. How do you define return?
If you can tell me that, you can.
System, it's
easy to define return.
Well, I think so.
Right.
N-step results. What
right.
is your measurable?
So I can share a smidge, maybe, of like what you might. So the tech. So I was somebody that I adored my smart board because it is a really. It's an engaging way to get students to interact with content that's not necessarily like sit and read this book or like it's not passive, right? They have to physically get up and touch and move and do things, which especially for younger learners, that's really important because a lot of them need to physically move their bodies as part of their learning experience. So smart boards were great. I loved it. I used it every single class, every single day. So I know that on campus where I work now, that type of technology is expected for many of our students for when they're doing their presentations, when they are also doing presentations that are both synchronous and asynchronous. So, like, when they have to do a presentation to a group of people that is in this room, but they're also presenting to a group that is in a Zoom meeting, like, somewhere else. So, it's really important that you know how to interact and do things that are visually engaging on technology that is interactive, and that you also know how to use that technology to get other people engaged in what you're doing. So it's something that might not be like when you go into an elementary music room, you might not look at the smart board and go, they're going to need that in college. But it is a skill that touching the screen and moving things around and understanding how that huge screen is connected to a computer or how that huge screen is also connected to the internet, that is a skill that's transferable to later on. So that's one thing that might be like a return on investment that you're looking for. Maybe question mark. Is it?
Well, it could be. And it's like Tom said.
I mean, I've been.
Is it going to improve our grades? Is it going to improve the education of students? Is it going to improve the graduates? Is it going to improve those that succeed outside of afterwards? You know, like the numbers we're looking at, how many. You know, succeed in their 2-year degree, in their 4-year degree. That's the success.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know?
I think it's a step further. So as teachers are coming into the systems, it's an expectation. What's in the classroom that I expect to use with my kids? And So, yeah, my classroom, I went, the very first thing I pushed to get was that. That was what I pushed to get. Why did I go to that rather than the chalkboard?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I believed in using colors for my math. Okay. So then the next big push down the road was, what's a smart board? Okay. So that idea of that technology in there, what Dave's sharing right now is that where the technology is gone is that we have to continue to do a refresh on that life expectancy of those, of the bulbs and those systems, and then the labor. So now what he's actually done is he's eliminating a lot of labor by not having to have the projector mounts and having it built in. So it's that next phase there.
And power.
Mm-hmm.
Power. Those bulbs are hot and the fan. So you're saving in the end, either way. Yeah.
But it comes to, so, it's really about what's expected there. So if you took out what's expected, that changes, you know, a lot of what.
Well, I think it's also a draw for some of the, maybe the higher qualified teachers coming out of college.
Yeah.
If they see.
Because when I came from. That Ryan Schmefferson. they did not have the smart boards and the, what do we call them, the camera on our neck? They didn't have those, and they didn't have document cameras. And when I came into my classroom, I was like, I get to, this is for me. It was amazing. And if you don't have student engagement, you're never going to have those test scores and things like that. Well, and then another component is that a smart board, along with like phonic ears, the microphones that hang around teachers, and document cameras, is that it really helps with ADA compliance. So like students that have visual impairments, hearing impairments, those pieces of technology make those adaptive systems accessible in your classroom
for everyone.
I'm listening to you all and I'm putting the pieces together.
It's iPad that's like the size of a whiteboard.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good descriptor. Old people. I dealt with this at work. You'd have some guy come up to the screen. We had presentation. He'd say, I want to see, and all of a sudden it jumps up.
Yeah.
Don't touch it.
Because it is a computer.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Payne.
Mm-hmm.
Last time I just looked at my email. I'm waiting for Rob Gavin. He's our attorney. He works for Collins and Blaha on the purchase agreement coming back. So last week on the Pleasant Grove property sale. So last week we had Heather. And so Rob sent it to me, worked with Habitat. Now we sent it back to him. He knows he has to get it back to me. And he's just proving it. Okay, that's all Rob is doing right now. But in there, we would be selling 3.25 acres of the Navarre Field property. And that's only because that's how it's described. People understand where that's at. It's $87,474 is the purchase price. It would be a cash sale. We're using Hassett as our title company. And as soon as I get this from him tomorrow, I'm going to put it in your hands so you can look at it. There are two contingencies, and the first contingency is that the surveyor generates paying that legal description. It's done. Final closing costs. Oh, a seller will pay the related land division of the city. Here it is. Phase one. There it is. I was at Belgrand. They're finishing up their environmental study. Okay. Which the property's had nothing on it. The worst thing they've got right now, there's a little building on the side. But that's it. So the environmental study should have a problem. We have to work through the city on splitting the property up. Okay, which again isn't going to be an issue because every 10 years they're allowed to make four splits. We haven't done anything, so that won't be a problem. We're working right alongside of David from Habitat to get that done. What this does allows him to have that we have this work done as soon as we possibly can. It's as he was telling me, with the city, it's really fill out the documents. They don't have to put it in front of their board. It's just a procedural. Questions on there?
What the purchase price is $87,474. What closing costs are we obligated for?
So our closing cost is company titles conveyed. Seller will pay costs related to securing a land division from the city of Monroe. That's all Enviro paid. We're not using a realtor, and so it's just the Enviro pay the cost survey and their legal description, which they did. That's
they
only have to do a phase one? Yeah. Yeah, they only had to do a phase one. No, they're picking up all of that.
Okay.
Those costs right there.
No out-of-pocket.
No out-of-pocket there. No 3% realtor. Yes, ma'am.
So why are we putting this to vote before this is all completed? Like, why would we vote on an incomplete?
So what we have is they're just waiting for the environmental study to come back. We have to get the land division. It's all about our number. He needs the sale to be done. So that the moment we get that property division done, we can go to HASA and close there. And so it's just trying to hit our timelines for us because we don't have another board meeting until June. And he has that investor.
In the May is the deadline.
And so it's really just we're just approving a sale.
And yeah, as long as we need to voting on something before it's complete.
But this is complete.
My window, it got shattered.
Well, this is complete. It's like.
Well, there's still contingency stuff out there that hasn't been completed yet.
Well, the environmental one is they were out there last week, so now they're just waiting for the report. We just have to do the land division.
Yeah, so why don't we have that completed before we do this?
Because we don't have another board meeting before June. So, but it won't. I mean, so what's the. It's a condition that's been fulfilled. The sale happens, and if, for example, the city doesn't allow for a land split, then
guess
yeah, there's been a lot of conversations.
I'm guessing that's not.
They've been part of this whole discussion.
Yeah.
They're excited about it.
That to answer your question, that's why if. Labor Day wasn't sitting there and everything that a month, we would have had that another board meeting. We would fund it. Other part you'll see in for tomorrow night on your motion will be as to the approval of purchase agreement. But then the next line right in there is giving me the authority, even though board policy already gives me the authority to sign all legal documents. It really is important on the sale of properties, especially passive. I've worked with these guys before, that in the board minutes, it does stipulate that the superintendent has the authority to sign for this, for these legal documents. It just reassures them that the proper person is. That's why that second part was on there. It's more of just a documentation that we provide literally the minutes of the board meeting to HACCP, and it covers them.
Just because we mentioned tomorrow, there's a lot on tomorrow, and although some of those we discussed today, we have not had discussions on everything that's being put forth. My notes are quite
so. We were trying to figure out what to bring into the workshop. That's why we push out into board briefs, and so we asked if you have questions and stuff right there. But that's also why in the motion running the business. For discussion and bring up the questions that you have.
It helps doing that with questions because look at the things we've discussed, we brought to. So when we get in there, you know, like the first filter grant purchase, you know, when there's a, like, I have a bunch of questions on that, and the carpet purchases. Some of the language in there, I got questions on the copier we discussed, the elevators we discussed.
So the carpet, for example, that's been an annual replacement process that we do each year. The filter first, every school in the state of Michigan had it, but that was I was trying to figure out how many items, like we had 7 items on tonight's agenda. And I know we won't, like on the Tuesday night one, we try to limit that to 3 and make sure we stay inside those time frames.
I would just like when we're looking at spending, you know, $200,000, that there was an in-depth conversation on it, or two, because like the carpet purchase, it includes in there add or change installation locations, and it also includes an extra 467 yards to be used at will. And so that came to a cost of $17,773. So my question is, when we're spending $89,000, why do we need to include that in there? Or why not, when there is a purchase need, we identify what those needs are rather than have this whole, we're going to do.
I can take that in if you want. The reason we
that do. That was a question I had for tomorrow.
That's where.
But when I write that question out, I don't always, it's not always understood because it's a written language, it's a spoken language.
No, I totally understand what you're saying. And that's where I'm trying to figure out, when Tom and I are talking about like, what items to get on our workshop agendas, because there's a, as you've seen in that board meeting, a lot of stuff. And that's why we say, okay, if you've got questions on it, call and we can go over the why. And what I would also invite, though, too, is if you call with a question, like on the folder first or the carpet one, that's still a good question in the boardroom in the discussion to bring up right there. Because it's still,
it just helps when everybody has a
chance. I could answer that.
Get out of here. Yep. I don't still have 5 other questions because it really didn't address the topic. So that extra carpet purchase is something I totally question. The
I think Mr. Payne said he had an answer.
I could answer that for you. I didn't want to interrupt you. So the reason we do that during the summer, stuff will happen where we might notice teachers' furniture is moved and there's a rip that's unsafe, or you uncover the furniture, it's real worn. That gives us basically 4 or 5 rooms in the district that we could swap carpet out that we didn't plan for. So that's why we do that. And we get it at the bidding cost. Otherwise, it could, well, for one, we might not get the carpet in time if we don't do that. Or if a principal says, this teacher, we're doing this, this carpet's it's not safe, it gets ripped, it's worn. That gives us the flexibility to have at least 4 or 5 rooms to get it knocked out if we need to.
So at the beginning of the year, I remember you saying that you went out and did room inspections, and you inspected all the rooms, and that whole reason for room inspection was to identify things like this.
Mm-hmm.
So that before everything, this is part of the reason some of redesigning too as well, and that way you knew exactly what needed to replace, what done. So why would 5 extra rooms come up when that process is already done?
Well,
that's the part I'm trying to.
So, for instance, let's say you move this furniture right here, and we decide now we want it around the edge. Well, there's a big tear in the middle. We can't have kids walking across the tear. Can't repair it. We'll replace that. You're only seeing, when you do inspections in classrooms, maybe 50, 60% of the square footage because it's covered with larger furniture, not just desks, for instance. Sometimes, just happened out here, you move something and you could accidentally rip the carpet.
Or cleaning it so much.
Yeah.
It's
so when you figure we have 300 some classrooms, 5 rooms a year is good, because if we, let's say we only need 3, now in October if something happens and we need to replace one, we got that spare carpet.
I think this is important because after 5, 6
what's that?
You're going to be moving a lot of furniture. And you're going to uncover stuff in some of these rooms that you have not seen.
Well,
I promise you.
And the rooms that they're going into have been preschool rooms.
Yeah.
9 or 10 of them.
Even worse.
And this would be additional.
You might need more than just 5 rooms.
Yeah.
We do it every year. So.
Why can't we just put that on the side that if there's additional, rather than say we're going to spend $17,000 and we're not sure, why not have it on the side and pull that out of here?
You typically use all those carpets. So,
100%.
Yeah.
We could use 10 rooms, but we just can't afford it.
Yes, right.
So, you're talking.
So what you're saying is that you target the rooms and you know that there's going to be other rooms, and that's, so it's really, the total bid is the X number.
We could change, let's say this is for, we're trying to focus in hallways and areas that are, and the reason we picked Arbor South is because there's a lot of movement there. So why not replace the carpet rooms that are already going to have the stuff moved out? But you can anticipate move to rip, not to mention we could do 40 rooms a year and replace carpet. We're just trying to get as much out of it as we can. But that allows us to get the most ripped areas. You know, like I think 2 years before the bond, we were going to replace all in front of the auditorium, which we did last year. But there was two areas that we had to replace because it was ripped so bad. So we had to use so many square foot of carpet to do those areas. It just really gives us, you know, just like anything you would do, get a little bit of spare that you can anticipate. And if we don't use it, it's not like we lose it. We could use it next year, worst case scenario, but we've always used it up.
Because Ron and I will go over the first grant, because it's really a good opportunity for the public to understand what the state of Michigan did with giving schools. And so, you know, we say a grant, everybody got it. It's just to what degree did they actually get.
And we legally have to do it. So if we didn't get that grant money, it'd be coming out of our general fund or sinking fund. Yeah. But I don't know.
Well, it is coming out of the general fund.
No, it's
federal grant.
There's like $100 that didn't.
Grant and general fund. So my question was, how much?
There's like $100 out of 280,000.
If you look at the math, it's like $100 is only coming out of the general fund.
Yeah, so 325 and then 350 or something.
What's the number?
So it's 269,525,000 total. But the grant's going to pay
$269,387. I've glossed over those as being the same number.
And it's, for us, I mean, evaluation, Tim did a great job on this, going through and evaluating literally every single spot. And that's why it's only because we have so much money.
Every water source has to be filtered starting next year, and it has to be labeled if it's not, and you have to do required flushes and water testing. So there's a lot of new.
We don't have any more lead pipes.
I don't think we have any lead pipes. No. This is just, well, some of the old equipment we're taking out might have had it, but we don't use it. It wasn't being used anyways. So there might have been some old fixtures we're just taking out, but then some we're replacing.
One is capping off of water and drain lines for some drinking fountains, and then it said not included in the outline of the work. So is this an additional cost that's anticipated outside of it? I believe you're actually on the page right there, Mary, with this stuff.
I'm not looking at that exact thing, but I do know, because you said
added cost.
Well, there might be some situations where when we first looked at the law, you couldn't have more than X amount of feet. Now they've changed it to where the filter can be in line. A lot of these we're not replacing. They're just an old, for instance, in Arbor South in the old locker room, there's an old porcelain. It's an awkward location. We're just removing that and capping it off, putting a metal plate in. So if you ever did want to put one, but you have to have power. So there's a lot of areas that aren't conducive. I think we have to have one filtered bubbler for every 100 students, if I remember looking at the law. And we'll meet that with us. Yeah.
It also said they need to install a fountain without a filter. So if they have to have filters, why would we put in fountains without filters?
I don't.
And how much cost?
I would have to read that. We're not putting in any fountains without a filter. What the contractor might be saying is if you want to put one where there's no power or something,
it's right on the Thompson. When they did that addendum,
this
is coming from their addendum.
Yeah.
So to me, this is an addition to the contract and the information.
That's the bottom dollar we'll be spending right there.
So all this $300 per picture is already included in there?
Because one of the things, too, our staff have already replaced several. We've been trying to pick away at them as well. Athletic areas, key areas that are used a lot. Mm-hmm. And then this just helped us get a major jump start.
Didn't we just replace water fountains? So those are still remaining. They don't need to be replaced.
Some of them that were put in before bid pack 6 were put in before that law was put in without filters. So we have to fix them. Or the high school. So that's where we have to look and can we just add a filter? Do we have to replace it? That's why this grant's really helpful.
I would just make note of them saying that they may.
I'm going to have to relook at that document.
It's the addendum, like, they wrote out all the additional stuff, and that's where I got all this from.
We'll have that information for you tomorrow. I'll look that over.
Again, that's a great question, because a lot of people hear about water. That's
Do you know what page that was on?
Yeah, so if we're looking in our packet for tomorrow, it's on page 55. So if you're looking at the Thompson quote, it would be the first, second, third, fourth page. Fourth page of their quote, page 55 of our board packet.
Plus Thompson and Lillis.
Yeah, they're their
I just wanted to make sure it wasn't.
It just says that if the fountains that they specified don't fit into the opening where they're meant to go, that they may have to put in a fountain.
But those, that yeah. That's them just covering their butt as far as they've been. And what we would do in that situation is say, okay, we're going to cap that one, and we're going to have to put another one in a different location.
My problem. Yes to something that there's stuff in there that I have a problem with, and that addendum is my biggest problem with this entire project. And I understand the breakdown of all the schools, you know, and how
the addendum
schools are going to cost, and then labor only is $90,000, is what it says. So the rest is all equipment at $300 a filter. So about
buy some stock and filters because the whole state's got to do it.
Yeah, what's the number of pounds?
We'd have to look. I don't know offhand. You mean total in district or total of this? We're not doing that. No. That's just them covering. Yeah. That's all. There's some locations that are not good. But that's what they're doing. The contractor's like, that's just normal.
I get it. If Thompson wants to cover their beef line, I understand that from a contract standpoint. But the language in there is not conducive for Monroe Public School System when you're telling me the state law says they all have to have filters. And we have a contractor that says, hey, if we come up with that, we're going to put an
option. No, they're not. They would. Yeah. That's just what they do.
Probably someone in their legal office that they needed to put in their addendum would be my guess.
So what?
And so they're having all the water lines, drain lines. There's no added cost there.
Well, if they got to take off, that's labor.
That's all included in the.
Well, it just says that they're offering that as an option. Right. So Thompson Plumbing Heating is offering an option for having off water and
Yeah. And that's why I asked my question. Was that decision?
You got ranges of fountains that are 40 years old. I mean,
pretty old ones.
And most of those are just getting torn out, off.
But they've already identified that. If you've been out of the project, they've already identified what the totality of the project is. How many fountains, how many water.
They haven't taken the old ones off yet to mount one. They might say, if I mount it here, there's no room for a filter. What do you want to do? And we're going to say, don't put it there. We're going to move it.
And what would be the cost of that?
We don't know. But that's how it is on everything. If you want that price, we can pay $300,000 to fully inspect it. Yeah. Because if you want a contractor to go through to give you every penny, your architectural fees, your engineering fees would be through the roof.
So I'm of the conclusion that this is grant money. Only approximately $100 is coming out of general fund, and not anticipate any more general funds being used for this project.
The only time there would be is if we decide to add a fountain when our staff would probably put it in later down the line, like we've done at high school.
Let us know if there's an additional cost out of the general fund based on this.
Well, I can tell you there's going to be an additional cost at some point to work on fountains between now and forever.
But the nice thing is, this will be our hard work on it. So we have to cap one, or we're struggling with the location. Like you said, we've already been doing it on our own. You know, we won't have them doing it ourselves.
For instance, we wanted to put one upstairs to get the mop closet. Right now on the upper gym, there's no water source. So they got to carry water buckets up to do. So that became a big issue. We had to have Monroe Plumbing help us with some stuff. I mean, there's these buildings, if they weren't designed for things, it's, you know, putting in a bottle fill, electric, cooler, all that stuff wasn't set up right. So we might have to make some quick adjustments to a different location. Now, worst case scenario, we might say, okay, we'll keep the fountains, but don't install these six. Just cap them off, and we'll decide later where to put them. As long as we're at that ratio.
Of the law.
Yes. Yep.
Thank you. So my bigger part of my conversation was the fact we're looking at general fund balance sitting below the 812. What we typically have, these are all general fund dollars, and that would be additional general fund dollars.
And that $100.
So at some point, we got it. You can't, you know, I was left from the 5%.
The grant dollars are included in the general fund revenues, and the grant expenditures are already included in the budget that you guys approved in February. So it's already there. You're just approving now that we've, like, if we don't do this project, then we don't get any of that grant money, and we don't have any of those expenditures.
I'm not suggesting the project.
I'm trying to let you know that it's already taken into account, and it's a net zero, net $100 at today's estimate.
I got you.
If this gets us down to the 5%, then we should be able
And this is a great, we should be focused on all these fountains will be filtered for our students to drink. These pipes are old. I mean, I don't know if I want my kids drinking them without a filter.
That's why we talked about it last.
No, I
did. Yeah, but
you can spend that. Yeah, that was
just okay. When this project is completed, does this mean that our custodial staff will not have to go through the buildings and turn on every faucet every morning anymore? Mm-hmm.
No, because that's part of the new law. We have to do that.
Okay, so that's going to have to continue.
Because we're just, think about it this way. The pipes are still the pipes. This is just the very end. Okay. Now, there'll be filters, but a lot of the flushing, though, isn't just for those. It's for bathroom sinks, so you don't get that yellow. But yeah.
So, like, you come in this building, we have a 3-day weekend, a 2-day weekend, go to the boys' restroom. And I turn on the water, and it's yellow, so I got to let it roll on, let it run for a few moments, and it clears out. That's old pipes. That's why they flush the system to run the water.
These are to ensure the drinking water is filtered. So, this is just the potable water, not
it will be once a year starting now. We have to. The water.
At the source.
Well, I'd have to look at the law to say where we have to pull the water, but I'm assuming there'll be different spots.
Are we testing it based on the last incident?
I think with Flint, we were trying to be proactive and test to do some flushes, test it before. It was before I was part of it, but I remember the process.
Right.
It was first thing in the morning while they were sitting. They were trying to get a good handle on it, and the tests were good. Just, they're dirty pipes. This is going to ensure that the students that are drinking it, it's filtering all that.
There's a couple different options for doing water testing. So you can either test it at the intake
from
the city, or you have to test
it at our
amount.
Yeah. Just because it's all yellow.
I can have Chim be here tomorrow, so he's a water specialist.
I grew up in Southwest.
I was going to say,
today with all the black specks in our water that we drank.
Mm-hmm. Gary should test it. Gary, did you test? You should test it.
I can do
that.
Hey, do
it. That's my first
time.
Yeah. I think that's the first time you spoke today.
It was.
It was. Glad to hear your voice.
I thought $3 was a good idea.
I'm assuming we have no public comment.
We do not. Unless somebody would like
to. Therefore, do we have a motion to adjourn?
I motion to adjourn.
Do you have support?
Or
raise your hands. Okay.
Cindy.